This is The Naturalist. In every episode, we're covering the products, ideas, and trends that are shaping the CPG industry.
Or that we just really like.
Hello, we have a very special episode of The Naturalist today. This episode was recorded live at Natural Products Expo West 2024. And I've also got a guest host with me today, my colleague and friend from New Hope, Douglas Brown. We had a great conversation with Gabe Brown, farmer and co-founder of Regenified, and Christine Root, Regenified's chief marketing officer. Don't be alarmed if you hear a couple of forklifts. We are live from the show floor. Enjoy. So how's everything been going today?
Fun. Yes, it's always fun. The excitement of the first days are so fun. The energy.
Yes.
You're still full of energy and revitalized and ready to take it all in.
Well, and you were, you know, Regenified was there right from the beginning of the show, right? Because the State of Natural and Organic this morning with Carlotta Mast, you were part of that panel. What better way to kick things off than with that, right?
Absolutely. It was fun to see Gabe up on stage sharing the story.
It was good. It was enjoyable.
Well, we're here. This episode of The Naturalist is really exciting for me because not only do we have two fantastic guests, we have Gabe Brown, co-founder of Regenified, and also Christine Root, who's the chief marketing officer of Regenified. And I also have a guest co-host today, which is really exciting, Doug Brown. No relation to Gabe, I don't think.
Well, Gabe and I are representing for the Brown clan.
That's right.
Good to have you. And Doug is the senior retail reporter at New Hope. We work really closely together, which is such a privilege. So it's so great to have you on the podcast, too.
Wonderful to be here. Yeah, huge fan. Huge fan of the podcast.
You and my dad.
Yeah.
So let's kick things off talking a little bit about Regenified. What is it? What does it mean?
All right. Well, I'll start off and just Regenified is a certification. Right. So what we're doing is we're verifying practices that are happening out in the fields on farms and ranches and then giving them a certification when they're doing practices that create measurable outcomes. So we're checking for 65 different data points in the field, looking for practices and outcomes measurement. We're sharing soil samples, nutrient density samples, and water testing to figure out how are those ecosystems being impacted by the practices that farmers are using.
I'll just add to that a little bit on as to why my partners and I started and founded Regenified. What we saw was a real need for a certification that took farmers and ranchers where they are at and then moved them along. Because unlike other programs, you can't remain stagnant. You have to improve. And that's what regeneration is about. Also, we saw a lot of greenwashing going on. You know, there was many farmers, ranchers, companies, brands, et cetera, that were saying that they're sourcing regenerative products. And from someone who's been in the space as long as I've been and understanding ag, which is a consulting company that we have, is on over 34 million acres that we're actually consulting on across North America. We work with farmers and ranchers to move them down the regenerative space all the time. And so we're going, no, in our minds, that's not regenerative. What you're claiming is regenerative really isn't. And the only way to prove that out is by what Christine said. It's those 65 different data points, observations to really prove. And that gives consumers then, it gives the brands, and then eventually the consumers, a vote of confidence, a mark of confidence that, yes, when we purchase these products to put in our goods, they truly are regenerative. And then the consumers, in turn, can have that confidence that what they're buying is regenerative. And just background here, so you know, I want to make sure that clear that Regenified is a separate, standalone verification. It doesn't have anything to do with understanding ag. I simply use that as a reference point as to just how many acres we're on and the scope of knowledge that we have as to regenerative practices.
Well, we've talked a lot about how consumers are still not quite there when it comes to understanding what regenerative agriculture is. You know, how would you explain it to somebody? You know, let's maybe start from the most basic place. You know, how would you explain it to a consumer?
The way I explain it is, first of all, I listen. I want to know what their interest is in. So if it's a consumer, you find out, is their interest in human health? Is that why they are interested in regenerative products? Or is it in doing what's right for the climate? Are they trying to source from farmers and ranchers and help farm and ranch profitability? What are they interested in? And then that's the approach I take, because regenerative agriculture can address many, many issues that we face in society today. I think it's important for us to define regenerative agriculture also, because that's different in a lot of people's minds. And so the definition that we come back to time and time again is farming and ranching in synchrony with nature to repair, rebuild, revitalize, and restore ecosystem function, beginning with all life in the soil and moving to all life above the soil. And that includes us as a species ourselves. And I think that's very inclusive. And it's the type of definition that everyone can rally around. Through this testing, which is an annual testing, that you're advancing the regeneration on your farm or ranch. That's a big thing, because then the brands are going to get a product that is more consistent. They're going to get a product that is higher in nutrient density. They're going to be able to tout that to their customers. And so that's good for the brand. It's good for the farmer and rancher, because as they move down the regenerative path, they're going to increase their profitability. They're going to increase the resiliency of their farm or ranch. These are all good things. It's good for the consumer. It's good for biodiversity. It's just good all the way along. So that was the whole goal with Regenified. We wanted to build something that it's very inclusive. You know, at the beginning, any farmer or rancher can take part in it. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be certified. You know, they have to meet certain baselines, but then it'll help move them down the path, which is what we want. Because our goal as founders were, how do we get regenerative agriculture to take place broad scale? And our goal would be that, you know, 10, 20 years from now, everybody in the world is producing in a regenerative model. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as I discussed on the panel this morning, I'm on hundreds of farms and ranches every year. I've never been on a single one, including my own, that's not degraded. We're all farming and ranching degraded resources. We cannot afford to be sustainable. We have to be regenerative. Future generations, they can then have the opportunity to be sustainable.
It is a challenge. A lot of people do look at regenerative agriculture and say, how do we explain this? How do we tell consumers the benefit of what we're doing when it doesn't boil down to one simple thing? As Gabe mentioned, there are multiple pathways in, and as a marketer, the thing that gets me really excited is that it solves so many issues, as Gabe mentioned, and that creates hundreds of pathways in for consumers, right? And so I feel like there's actually a huge opportunity in regenerative for brands to be able to build a relationship with their customers where they are drawing them deeper and deeper into the narrative of their commitments and the reason that they've done this and the value proposition of why and what's possible, and to reach multiple different customer audiences through different value propositions that tie back to that same core commitment and action that they've taken. So although it's very challenging to get started, it creates a massive opportunity for connection, community building, and relationship development.
I love that. I'd love to hear also a little bit about how you got started on what's your regenerative journey look like?
So I'll gladly share that with you. I grew up in the city of Bismarck. I wasn't from a farm or ranch. So I took an interest in vocational agriculture when I was a freshman in high school and started taking vocational agriculture courses, got very involved in Future Farmers of America. And I actually went to college to be an ag educator because I thought that would be my in into agriculture. Well, I ended up marrying my high school sweetheart who was from a ranch, and she had two sisters, and neither of them or their husbands wanted to farm. And my wife always tells the story that she married a city kid to get away from the farm, and then here I was dragging her back because her parents asked us if we'd be interested in taking over the ranch. So that's how we started. I learned to farm very conventionally from my in-laws. It was tillage and the use of fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides, etc. That's how I learn, but I'm an avid learner. I always want to learn. I'm always asking why. So as soon as we were able to purchase part of the farm from them in 1991, I went 100% zero-till. I had just read enough about it that I sold all my tillage equipment, bought a no-till drill, went to no-till. So I was started on it, but that was 1994. What happened though, 1995, the day before I was going to start combining 1,200 acres of spring wheat, we had a hailstorm. I lost my entire crop. So that set us back significantly. 1996 came along. We lost 100% of our crop to hail again. My wife and I took off-farm jobs because we had a young family to support, had bills to pay, obviously. 1997 came along. We dried out, never combined an acre. 1998 came along. We lost 80% of our crop to hail. 4 years, no crop income. We were $1.5 million in debt with a young family. Okay, how am I going to make this work? But I tell people, the good Lord, he brought me those 4 years of natural disaster to teach me lessons. Because what he was teaching me, the hailstorms laid down the crop material on the soil. Well, that's one of the principles, armor the soil. I started to grow in a diverse array of different crops because the hailstorms were happening late in the year. Well, I come across, okay, I'm going to plant winter wheat. I can combine that earlier. I'm going to plant peas. I can combine that earlier. So I started to diversify the crop rotation. That's another principle. I literally, in 1998, our hailstorm came in June that year, too late for us to get a cash crop to maturity before frost, but I planted some cover crops. I literally did not have the money to buy the twine to put that up as hay, so I turned the animals in there in the winter to graze it. Well, it's another principle, integrating animals onto the crop plant. And when I was growing these fall-seeded biennials like winter wheat, winter triticale, hairy vetch, etc., that's another one of the principles, living root in the ground as long as possible. So I tell people the good Lord was really teaching me these principles, which I didn't call them principles back then. That came much later. But I was really learning how ecosystems function. And I tell people that was really tough to go through those 4 years. Absolutely the best thing that could have happened to my wife and I, because it sent us on this journey of regenerative agriculture, what's known today as regenerative agriculture. So it's all a good thing.
And in the end, you are an ag educator, which is what you went to school for.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
I am.
We'll have a couple thousand people visit the ranch every year from all over the world. I spend, for the last 6 years now, I've been on the road over 275 days a year educating,
wow,
teaching, explaining to others the importance of regenerative agriculture and what it can do.
Not many people can use their degrees 30 years later.
Right. You know, one thing that strikes me, Gabe, is when Regenify does go into ranches and farms, you can't literally measure success, progress on every inch of that land. So how does, in a technical sense, how do you go about doing that? Are there plots that are the same year after year? Is it randomly going through farms and testing for regeneration?
Very good question, Doug. Thank you for asking that. So Regenified has verifiers that are well-educated as to these regenerative practices. The number of tests they take and the acres depends on the size of the operation. And I'll let Christine address that a little further.
Yeah, so we're looking at a percentage of land. What we want to get is a representative sample of the whole, so that we can understand what's happening at large. And so our field verifiers are out in the field scouting the land and looking at that total picture and saying we need a representative percentage of that whole, looking for 50%, so that we can understand areas of low performance, areas of high performance, so we can kind of see that whole broad spectrum and see impact across.
If I may, they're there at different times of the year, but it's always GPS locations, so they're sampling the same area so they can truly measure. And then they're doing a lot of different observations on biodiversity, for instance. How many insects do you have? What's the bird populations? It's a tremendous tool to really prove that the ecosystem is advancing. And I think it's important to say that that's what Regenified is. It's a verification of regeneration of ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to shift gears just a little bit and talk a little bit about the brands that have now signed on or signed up for Regenified. If I'm not mistaken, there's a pretty wide range of, I think you have some personal care, of course, King Arthur, Nexi finalist.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about the brands that have committed?
I can tell you that the brands that have committed have made a passionate commitment to say we see regenerative agriculture as the future. It is the way that our food system needs to go, our agricultural system needs to go to sustain life on this planet as we know it for the human species. The brands in the Regenified Network have all made a significant commitment to regenerative agriculture. And that commitment is an emotional commitment. At this point, they know this is where the future of agriculture needs to be. And they know that it's not going to be an easy road. You don't just call up your supplier and say, hey, I'm looking for, you know, can you get me 120 tons of, you know, regenerative corn? And they know that they're in this to make a difference. And so they're really committed and they're resourceful. And they're saying, hey, how are we going to chunk down our supply chain? How are we know we want to make this difference and we want to have an impact, but how are we going to get started? What does this look like today? Where are we sourcing right now? What products go into our ingredients? How are we going to start creating a shift? And that journey is different for every single brand. So Maker's Mark is a really good example. A product that we don't even think of coming from agriculture has leaned in and said at the heart of it, the reason we have Star Hill Farm, the reason that Rob Samuel's grandparents started Star Hill in rural Kentucky is because at the heart of it, they knew that whiskey was an agricultural product, that the quality and flavor of their product came from their connection to the land and the quality of the agriculture.
I knew I liked Maker's Mark for a reason.
Absolutely. If you didn't have a good excuse,
now you do.
Now you do. But at the heart of it, so they really had to look at it and they had to say, okay, well, where are we sourcing right now? Where does all of our grain come from? And who are these farmers that are working with us? And will they join us on this journey? And so they made a proclamation, they made a commitment, and they engaged their farming community in this journey with them and said, who's with us?
So bold.
Yeah.
I love it.
Absolutely. And so this year they were able to barrel their first Regenified certified whiskey with 86% of the product going into that barrel being certified Regenified.
Oh, that's
wow.
100% of the Maker's Mark bourbon that is being barreled is certified Regenified.
I did not.
That's
know
the
that.
Commitment.
Wow.
Yeah. Not a few barrels. Gave.
Not a few.
Not a single product line.
All of it.
We should get our hands on one of those barrels, Doug.
I've got.
Yes, we should.
I happen to have one in my living room.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know the biodynamic world, wineries really took to that. And are you finding that outside of the CPGs that we see all over here at Expo, are you finding spirits, wine, beer leaning into this?
You know, what's really interesting is that spirits as a category as a whole, I was super surprised because that is not something consumers choose to do because it's good for them or it's good for the planet. And
it's just good.
Yeah.
It's just good. But what we see is that as Maker's Mark has made a big commitment, it has definitely got other spirit companies and alcohol companies thinking about where do their products actually come from and what are their values as a company and where is the future of the industry going? And so we absolutely do hear from other distillers, you know, from other folks in the spirits category that are saying, well, how does this apply to us? What would this look like? Wine, for sure. You know, wine, as you mentioned, has been in this space for a long time, recognizing that they are an agricultural product and right. that there's year-over-year transition. And what happens in this bottle of wine from 2024 is going to look different than what happened in 2023. And so I think in that sense, their connection to the process and how flavor is influenced through agriculture has been very strong. And we continue to see that in wine as well.
It's certainly inspiring to see big brands like that, like Maker's Mark, like King Arthur, like Pacha Soap, I'm never sure how to say it right. You know, signing on to this. I mean, it feels like that's really setting an example for the industry.
That's right. And see, one of the things we had in our goals when we formed Regenified is how do we move regenerative agriculture throughout supply chains to have a broader impact on our agricultural acres. So think of that, Maker's Mark. Now all their corn producers, okay, their barley producers will be. They're all moving, their wheat producers, all moving down the regenerative path. And we can the same thing, for instance, with Vital Farms. and they're producing eggs. Okay, but what most people don't realize is Regenified requires that all of the grains that those hens are consuming are from certified Regenified acres. Okay, so now all of a sudden you're impacting a lot of acres. So this is the goal we had. How do we get this spread all across the land? And the beautiful thing is we're, you know, doing it worldwide. Well,
Pot-to-Soap, you mentioned, is a really good example. And Pot-to-Soap is very different than Maker's Mark. It actually all started here at Expo, ironically.
Cool.
I can't remember if it was 5 or 7 years ago, but Andy and Andrew, chance encounter on the show floor, struck up a conversation passionately around regenerative agriculture and opportunities and possibilities to support worldwide supply in an industry that's actually got a really bad rap, red palm oil.
Yeah.
So how can that look different? And they went down a very long supply chain journey to really explore how can they do this different? What does regenerative look like in another product that you wouldn't think of as an agricultural product? But Pot-to-Soap comes from all raw agricultural ingredients. And so how do they take that in and how do they recreate their systems and really think, so for Pacha, they've said, you know, we want to really support regenerative agriculture. We want to take that ethos of regenerative agriculture and build it into our company and into our relationships throughout our supply chain. Through, you know, our work with the farmers, we want to add value at every point in that supply chain. And how do we build collaborative relationships? And so I had an opportunity to go out into the field with Pot-to-Soap a few weeks back in January and see some of these palm communities that are growing in their native habitat of the rainforest. They have palm trees growing. These are native palm trees that grew in this area naturally. And they're wild harvesting these, and they're actually harvesting that red palm as food for their community. Well, Pacha's not coming in to say, we want to buy the food that you're eating in your community. We want to take away your food source. They're saying, hey, when you harvest that palm, there's a little seed in there that you guys are discarding that just decomposes on the ground. We'd love to buy that from you, and we can press that, and we can get an oil out of that, and we can use that in our soap. So it's an additive value model. So those communities continue to maintain the integrity of the rainforest, that there's value by maintaining a healthy ecosystem in that rainforest and allowing it to continue to stand. Those kind of things took years to cultivate that.
Yeah.
But really thinking about how regeneration impacts community, the ecosystem, the communities in which those ecosystems exist, and then the relationships and the way of business and partnership between the companies to bring this to life, to a product that a consumer can go to shelf and say, hey, I can feel really good about what I'm doing here with this purchase.
It sounds like the education component, which is very important, it's pretty incumbent upon the brands. I mean, it's in their best interest to educate because it's essentially marketing, but it's less, the brands are in between the farmers. The farmers need markets, which the brands offer, but then the brands need to sort of work with the consumers. They're sort of in between the two sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I always see that there are four main contributors in this system that all have to be working together, right? So we've got farmers who have to change their practices and commit to a pathway and a way of thinking and a way of operating. We've got brands who need to look at how are we sourcing and supplying for our products and what's the impact of that. We've got retailers who have a major role to play in saying we're going to make sure that we're giving value and space to companies that are making these kind of impact commitments. And then we've got consumers who at the same time, all of these kind of need to move forward in tangent, but we need consumers to go to shelf and say, hey, I'm going to make a commitment to vote with my dollar to buy products that are better for the planet, better for me. I mean, we talked about those 100 pathways into regenerative agriculture, but we need all four of them to move together.
Yeah.
I think the beauty of it, too, it's kind of a push-pull type system. You know, you're approaching from all angles. So you have farmers and ranchers who are saying, hey, the current industrialized commoditized system isn't working. It's low profitability. Well, we can, through regenerative practices, cut our input costs, make us more profitable, so they want to do it. And then you have the brands who are looking to source from them, but then you got the consumers who are also demanding it, so we're getting this action throughout the entire supply chain, so to speak, and that's a good thing. That's what we want. We want this buzz, and you certainly see it here at Expo West.
Yeah, and I want to speak to some of why the brands are asking for it. It's because what brands need to do is create the highest quality, best tasting product for consumers. You can have the healthiest product on the marketplace, and if it doesn't taste good, consumers won't buy it again. You can have the coolest looking packaging and like the best story, and if it doesn't taste good, consumers aren't going to buy it again. And our brands are finding, they're finding flavor through regenerative agriculture, and it goes back to what Gabe was saying before about those phytonutrients. They influence the flavor profiles, they enhance and bring out. And so that flavor, that quality is really high in these regenerative products. And so what you were mentioning is there's a value add to everybody across the supply chain. Farmers increasing profitability, brands getting higher quality, higher nutrient density products, consumers investing in impact from the whole supply chain process, better for me products, better quality, better flavor, like everybody's winning.
You know, one question I had, Gabe, talking to you guys here today, why doesn't every farmer do this? Talking to you guys, it's so enchanting, you know? But so you must talk to farmers all of the time. What are some of the key roadblocks?
Yeah, so I get asked that question, Doug, all the time. And I use myself as an example. Okay, I have a couple college degrees in agriculture. Never, ever in any of my coursework that I took did they mention the four ecosystem processes. Never did they mention the six principles of soil health. I had no idea how a soil aggregate was formed. I had no idea that there's more microorganisms in a teaspoonful of healthy soil than there are people on this planet. And it's those microorganisms that provide the plants with those nutrients that then get transferred to us. Farmers and ranchers cannot implement what they do not know. When we started Regenified, we knew it had to be an educational process also. So lack of education is one of them. The other one is realize farming and ranching is a very capital intensive business. Farmers and ranchers borrow a lot of money every year to put a crop in the ground and to operate. Well, the lenders don't understand that what regenerative agriculture is. You're going to do what? You're going to try what? Even though we have a very good track record of increasing profitability. There's work by Dr. Jonathan Lundgren at the Dices Foundation that shows regenerative farms and ranches 76% higher profitability. That's not just a little bit, that's a lot. And that was a very large study. So we know it can increase profit. The third thing, though, that's keeping them from doing it, peer pressure. You know, I was forced to. I was either going to lose my farm or ranch if I didn't change. So I don't care what the neighbors think. I was in survival mode. Well, it's not easy when you're ridiculed by your community for doing something different. So that's the main reasons, those three, why more farmers and ranchers don't do it.
So earlier, Gabe, you mentioned that regenerative is a very emotional thing. And I just wanted to say that while you two were talking today, I felt all of those emotions. I felt like applauding. I felt like crying a couple times. I mean, I just found this to be so incredibly inspirational. So I just wanted to thank you both so much for being here. I'm really excited to see this continue to grow, this movement to get even bigger. And just thank you.
Well, thank you. It was a real pleasure being here today. And I just encourage everyone, let's find common ground for common good.
Absolutely.
Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Well done.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Gabe and Christine, but now it's time for the list. Okay, so we have a short but mighty list today. We are only talking about Regenified certified products that were exhibitors at Expo West. So Regenified obviously is a growing certification. There are more Regenified certified, not easy to say that, products than we are going to feature today, but these were three of the big ones on the show floor. So the first one I'm just going to roll right into is King Arthur Baking Company. They have this 100% regeneratively grown climate blend flour. I know I've talked about this on at least one other episode of the list. They were a Nexi finalist this year, but it's just such a unique product. It's a blend of wheat varieties that are grown using regenerative practices. That includes an innovative perennial wheat. So they worked with Bread Lab, which is a Washington State University organization. They breed these wheat varieties that are better for the soil, encourage sustainable farming, and then they put all three of those grains together into this product. And the really significant thing here, I mean, we all know King Arthur, fantastic company, been around, I think, since the late 1700s. It's a certified B Corp. It's 1% for the planet. It's employee owned. But the really cool thing here is that they have a goal that by 2030 to have 100% of King Arthur flour sourced from regeneratively grown wheat. Very cool. Love this brand. Cannot obviously stop talking about them. All right, Doug, you're up. What have you got for the list?
The next brand on our list is La Toranjel, a California artisan mill handcrafting award-winning all-natural expeller-pressed specialty oils, dressings, and nut butters. This family-owned brand got its start in 1867 in France, and now, in addition to supporting regenerative and organic farmers around the world, it also has a 28-acre property with 10,000 olive trees in California, powered by a solar farm. We hear a lot about products like wheat, beef, and beans that come from regenerative farms. And now, thanks to La Toranjel, we have a wide range of culinary and cooking oils packaged in attractive tin cylinders. My guess is you've seen the brand many times on store shelves. You can't miss those tins. I've got some walnut oil in my house right now, and I'm going to start looking for other oils for the pantry now that I know about La Toranjel's commitment to sustainability.
I love those oils. I used to actually, now hearing that they're French, I feel kind of stupid that I used to come to the States on vacation and buy them and take them back to Spain with me. But I love those walnut oils, and now I'll never, ever be able to see that product in the store without putting on my fake French accent and saying, La Toranjel.
Yeah, I've actually got, as I was speaking, I realized I just saw it today. We have hazelnut oil up there in the cabinet, too.
Well, they're so pretty, too. I mean, they're delicious, but they're so pretty, and I love everything about them. I love the sustainable packaging. I love their story. Such a cool brand. So the last brand on our list is Pacha Soap Co. We've talked a lot about this company because they were also a NEXT finalist with their line of limited edition plant milk soaps that are made with upcycled ingredients, which is really cool. Everybody knows Pacha. They've been around forever. It's a purpose-driven company. They give 10% of products to a foundation that does a lot of great work with hygiene, with water access, with community support, with creating jobs. And they have this Regenified certified line of regenerative soaps. And what I love about these three soaps is they really communicate those values right there on the packaging. So if you've ever seen Pacha, a lot of times the soaps don't have any packaging. If you get them in Whole Foods, they're kind of in bulk. But these come in this incredible packaging that really talks about those values of supporting regenerative agriculture and smallholder farmers. And I really love that because I think brands need to do all they can to get that message about regenerative across. The company also participated in a fantastic session at Expo West that was all about how to connect brands with those regenerative supply chains. So just such a great company that is doing so much, and we're so excited to see them partnering with Regenified. And that's our list today. Small but mighty. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe to The Naturalist, and thanks so much for joining us.
Want to be on The Naturalist? Send us an email at thenaturalist@newhope.com.